Welcome back to another edition of Behind the Headlines. I'm your host, Katie O'Connell. Hope you had a great Thanksgiving. Coming up in today's show, did you know that Brett Favre used to pull pranks on the rest of his Packers teammates? We'll hear from Leroy Butler about Brett Favre's pranks later on in this show. Also coming up in today's show, Marquette basketball beat writer Matt Velasquez joins me to talk about how Marquette's team is turning around after its rough start to the season. For our new segment, and really our show overall today, we wanted to dissect some of the headlines surrounding the holidays this season. First, we'll hear from Meg Jones, who talked to me about her experiences in Iraq and Afghanistan, spending the holidays with active duty troops. Meg has been to Iraq and Afghanistan 4 times each, spending holidays such as Christmas, New Year's, Easter, Memorial Day with our troops. Here's what she said about those experiences.
People say, when they look at, say, Christmas, to many people it might seem like it's all about shopping and Black Friday and, you know, all the things that we get. But really, when you get right down to it, holidays like Christmas, like Thanksgiving, they're not about all those trappings. They're not about turkey dinners. They're about home. They're about the people that we love and being with them, whether it's our family, our friends, a combination. And granted, yes, you do want to watch the Packers play, you know, after eating Thanksgiving turkey, or, you know, you have Christmas presents under the tree. But basically what it gets down to is that it's a time to be with your family. So when I spent time overseas, every group that I was with, and they're all Wisconsin troops, they would make the attempt to simulate Christmas as much as they could. They would have small trees that were sent from home, or they would have very nice dinners, you know, like a Thanksgiving-type dinner. But the one thing they didn't have, though, was their family and their friends. And so it was always kind of a time when they would say to me, all I want to just do is just do my job and work hard. It'll kind of make me forget about what I'm missing back home. And sure, they can Skype, and they can email and instant message and all these other things, but that's not the same as you know, being able to hug your spouse, to be able to gather your kids up in your arms, or to be there when they're opening up their presents on Christmas morning. It was a sad time in some respects, but in some other respects, though, the units that these people are serving in, they're also a family of sorts, too. So while they're missing their biological family and their close friends back at home, they are spending the Christmas with a different family. And because, especially the National Guard and Reserve units that I spent time with, they became very close-knit units. They would get together and sing carols or, you know, exchange gifts and stuff. But always in the back of their mind, they're like, okay, this is one more day less that I've got to serve over here. So, and sometimes I would talk to these folks and they said, you know what Christmas Day means to me over here? It's just one more day that I'm out on the road in a Humvee traversing the highways of Iraq and trying not to get blown up. I always felt privileged to go over there and spend the holidays with them. I was away from my family and friends as well too. But I felt it was very important to be there at that time because in a lot of respects, the families back home, they didn't know what was going on in Iraq or Afghanistan with their loved ones. So if I could write about what it was like to be out on the road or, you know, guard duty or training or whatever that they were doing over there, that was also another way for their families to feel that just that much more closer to their loved ones at a special time. I think at the heart of it, the soldiers want to know, and not just soldiers, but all Marines, airmen, and sailors, they don't want to be forgotten. They want people to know that they're busy, that they're hard at work overseas. I know that a lot of times when I was over there, there'd be gift packages, things like that, that would come over, and they did really appreciate that. I do remember, I think it was Christmas 05. I remember a particularly somber Christmas for me. It was Christmas Eve, and I was in Baghdad, and I had spent a lot of time there already. And I remember going to it was a Christmas Eve gathering and in one of the big bases, and it was outdoors, and they had music and, you know, trying to, you know, just to kind of lift people's spirits. But I remember one of the commanders addressing the group of people and saying, he said, I just came back from the hospital, and he said, I saw one of my soldiers die, and it was somebody that had been blown up by an IED and it held on for a while. And he said, I know that at Christmas time, if you listen to the carols, it's supposed to be goodwill to men, peace on earth. But he said, it's really hard for me to think in those terms when I have to contact somebody and I know that there's going to be, you know, people showing up, knocking on some poor family's door. And I've written about those folks. A lot of times people did die on Christmas Eve or Christmas Day, and they would find out on those days. And forever, that holiday is always going to be linked to them. So I remember thinking at the time, and I wrote a blog about this. I wrote like the words to like peace on earth. And I was kind of comparing and contrasting what those words that they were singing meant to them. And yet it was so different from what they were experiencing at the time. And I kind of wondered, this is 10 years ago, I kind of wondered if there ever would be peace on earth, if the words that they were singing would ever come true.
To find more of Meg's work, visit jsonline.com/news. Now, if you're like me, you've gotten a head start on your holiday shopping. I like to do that. It gives me a chance to take advantage of sales before Black Friday even comes. But most holiday shoppers are really hitting the stores right about now. Paul Gores is our retail reporter. Here are his thoughts on the importance of the holiday shopping season for the overall American economy. So what's the economic outlook for the holiday season, and how is that significant?
It's a pretty big deal for retailers. I think the National Retail Federation is predicting that in November, December, the whole shopping season, holiday shopping season, there'd be about $650 billion in sales, which is up about 3.7% from the year before. Actually, it was a little bigger jump in the previous year, but that's what they're calling for this year. And for retailers, it's a huge deal. For even though Black Friday's kind of changed and it's spread over more days, the whole season altogether can supply up to 30% of a company's revenue.
And what accounts for the increase in sales this year?
They feel that the economy is strong enough. More people are working. It's all tied into the economy. We actually have lower gas prices, too, that kind of hit just in time for the shopping season, which might free up a little more income for people to spend on gifts.
So when you're reporting on the holiday season, what are some of the things you look for and what are some of the trends you pay attention to?
The big trend over the last couple of years that I've covered this has been the shift in timing of the season. For example, it used to be Black Friday. I used to, and other people, our reporters who have covered this over the years, used to line up along with the people and cover the big crowds that would be standing outside Walmart at 3 o'clock in the morning, Best Buy, waiting for those doorbuster deals, that, you know, the giant TV for a price you won't get any other time of the year, things like that. That's really changed. You don't find those big lines anymore. A couple of years ago, a lot of big retailers switched to opening on Thanksgiving Day. Thanksgiving evening, generally after giving people time to eat and maybe watch their first football game, and then head out to the stores. So that's happened. There was some pushback on that, people saying that, hey, you're making the employees work on a holiday. That's unfair. And so there's that aspect to it. But I think it's probably here to stay because they got pretty big crowds to come out. And actually, you know, some people are looking for stuff to do. I mean, you can only spend so long with, you know, relatives and eating stuff all day long, and then maybe you want to get out. It's also a big movie day, you know, so a lot of people go to a movie. This is something else a family can do if they like to shop. They can do together, and it can be fun.
And will you be doing any Black Friday or Cyber Monday shopping?
Yeah, I will. I'll be out Thursday night just checking a couple of malls to see what it looks like, tweeting out some pictures and some information. And then I have a tradition with my sister, actually. We've been going out on Black Friday morning for years and years, and she helps me pick out things that my wife might like. So,
now, we won't know the final numbers quite yet about Black Friday, but you can find our coverage of Black Friday shopping and tomorrow coverage of Cyber Monday shopping online at jsonline.com/business. Coming up in a bit, we'll hear from Leroy Butler about Brett Favre's greatest Packers pranks, But first, here's Matt Velasquez. Marquette has had to turn around after a rough start to the season. Here's Matt on how they did that.
The team had the day off on Friday, and when they got back to practice on Saturday, he totally took away everything. He took away all their Marquette-branded gear, their warm-ups, everything, and basically told them they had to earn back all of their stuff and the right to wear Marquette across their chest. And his guys really responded to that over the course of the next few days. They had one practice at the MU gym, and then they flew out to Brooklyn. And in practices there, it was the same thing. That was the case. They practiced in white T-shirts and shorts. And on Sunday night before the Legends Classic started, he saw a park in Brooklyn and stopped there, McLaughlin Park, and kind of just gave his team a little bit of a speech about, you know, basketball. When you grew up, it was just such a pure thing. This is what it was when you were growing up. This is where your dreams were made, just playing in T-shirts and shorts in the park. And then when they got to the tournament on Monday, you know, the Legends Classic tweeted out some pictures of them just practicing in their white T-shirts during the day, during shoot-around. And the coaches joined them, too. The coaches were just wearing plain white T-shirts and shorts or sweatpants. So it was a program-wide thing where all of them were equal and saying they had to earn back the right to represent Marquette. And so they came out with a new lineup. Tracy Carter, a freshman, and Hanif Cheatham, another freshman, they entered the starting lineup instead of a couple of returning guys, Dwayne Wilson and Juwan Johnson. And Marquette got off to a great start against LSU on a 10-0 run. And the game, you know, they maintained the lead for almost the whole game. Things got dicey at the end. Marquette committed 22 turnovers, which kind of helped LSU get back into it. But they held on for a one-point victory to move on to the championship game of the Legends Classic on Tuesday night, which they also won 78-73. In overtime over Arizona State. So after a first week of play where Marquette really didn't look like the team that a lot of people expected, they came back with two big, if not signature, wins to really get their season back on track.
And what do they have to do to keep this rebound going?
Well, I think that when Wojo really, you know, made them look in the mirror and figure out who they were and find out what kind of character that they had, I think all the players responded and they recognized the level of effort and level of buy-in that's going to be needed in order to succeed. But as you look at the next portion of the schedule, it gets a lot easier from here. When Marquette created their schedule, they did so knowing they'd have a lot of freshmen. They did so knowing that their team was going to be young and need some time to, you know, kind of come together. So this first stretch of five games was the most difficult stretch that they're going to face until conference play. And so over the next few games before they visit Wisconsin for a battle against the Badgers, you know, they've got some pretty low-level Division I opponents, starting with Jackson State. And so, you know, I think the most important thing will be for them to continue to refine their ability to play together. I think what Coach Wojciechowski is still finding the right lineups and the way to work them together and get the players to kind of gel together. I mean, it's only been five games, and so he's still kind of feeling that out. And I think he's kind of settling into the guys who he seems to trust more and like to play together more.
Okay, and what's your favorite part of covering Marquette basketball?
You know, it's really fun. I really enjoy college basketball. I think the college basketball atmosphere is different than the kind of atmosphere you get at other sports. You know, football can be, you know, really exciting and it's really big and you can feel that large scale of all of it. But whereas college basketball, you know, you kind of feel a little bit more part of the action and it feels like when everybody's crammed into a stadium or an arena, it feels a little bit tighter and more, almost more exciting.
Follow along with Matt's coverage of the Marquette basketball team at jsonline.com/sports. And again, stay tuned for more from Leroy Butler. Have a bookworm on your shopping list this season? If you're not sure what to get them, never fear. Books editor Jim Higgins has his annual list of 100 holiday books coming out this Sunday. Brianne Shasso sat down to talk with him about some of his favorite picks.
Jim, this week you offer readers a list of 100 books perfect for holiday gift giving. What goes into creating a list like this?
Well, Brianne, we do a list like this twice a year. We do a summer reading list in late May and then this list Thanksgiving weekend. So I'm looking to compile a list of books with ideas to give a person, you know, who likes to read but maybe doesn't have time to keep up or needs suggestions or doesn't get to a bookstore as often as she or he likes. I look for a variety, you know, fiction, nonfiction, Wisconsin books, what used to be called coffee table books, but I call visually interesting books because they come in a variety of sizes, and especially books for children, from little kids through teenagers.
With some of the books on the list, readers have a chance to get them signed by the author. Can you give me a few examples?
Sure. Boswell Books, our local Milwaukee bookstore at 2559 North Downer Avenue, still has a number of visiting authors scheduled between now and Christmas. Kevin Keefe, who wrote the text for Railroad Vision, Steam Era Images from Trains Magazine Archive, will be at Boswell on November 30th. B.A. Shapiro, who is an exciting new art history / refugee novel, The Mirror List, will be at Boswell on December 2nd. And Patrick McGilligan, who has the new biography, Young Orson, about the Kenosha years of Orson Welles, will also be at Boswell in December. So though, if you have a family member or friend interested in one of those subjects, go to the event, pick up a signed or inscribed book, and what a nice present.
Let's start with fine fiction. What are some examples on the list that fall into fine fiction?
A few to throw out at you. One is The Bazaar of Bad Dreams, which is a new story collection by Stephen King. And the interest is not only the short stories. King has a little essay on each one of how he came to write it. A really fine mystery, Dark Reservations by John Fortunato. Gift givers might want to know that it features a Navajo tribal policeman, and it's set in the same area where the late Tony Hillerman set many of his great mysteries. So if someone on your list is a Tony Hillerman fan and read all of Tony's mysteries, here's an idea made for you. For the literary and dramatic-minded, The Gap of Time by Jeanette Winterson. This was the first novel in a series that Hogarth commissioned to take the themes of Shakespeare plays and ask contemporary novelists to write new novels on the same theme. Winterson's novel is kind of a riff on Shakespeare's The Winter's Tale.
Let's take another category. What about, we mentioned pop culture pleasures. What are some examples in that category?
Sure. This is books largely about radio, TV, and film history and subjects. One that I also read, it's called The Comedians, Drunks, Thieves, Scoundrels, and the History of American Comedy by Cliff Nesteroff. Cliff is a former stand-up comedian who has been obsessively interviewing old-time stand-up comedians and writing about them for years online. And this book really is a history of 20th century American comedy, especially really strong on the early part of the century. If you're interested in comedy, this is definitely a book you would want to read. Another book, and completely different, is Hunger Makes Me a Modern Girl by Carrie Brownstein, the Sleater-Kinney guitarist and Portlandia star. And it's, as you might expect, it's a very smart and occasionally analytical memoir and, you know, a great read for people interested either in Portlandia or in the rock that she does. And for the hip-hop people on your list, the Rap Yearbook. This is really fun. Shea Serrano has taken every year of rap since 1979, picked what he thinks is the best song of that year, and written an extended essay with visuals and lots of back chat on it. And then he often has rebuttals from other people about, no, this other song was better. So that if you have a hip-hop fan on the list, that's a book I'd recommend.
What other books jumped out at you from the 100 compiled this year for gift giving?
And I'll delve into some of my personal favorites here. For the middle grade reader, although this is a book that you can read to younger kids, it's called Crenshaw by Catherine Applegate. And it's the story of a boy who's a fifth grader who comes to realize his family's facing another bout of homelessness. He could see his dad's working multiple part-time jobs, his mom is struggling with her health, and he sees another round of this coming. And his imaginary friend, who I won't describe here because I don't want to ruin the secret, from earlier childhood comes back in his life again. And it's a beautifully written book, and it's not overly sentimental. It's pretty straightforward and honest, age-appropriate. But this is really a book that the a 10-year-old could read by herself, or mom or dad could read to a younger kid, and it's in my personal picks for this year. Something for older people is a little book by Oliver Sacks called Gratitude. You may remember that Oliver Sacks is the famous neurologist and beautiful writer who wrote The Man Who Mistook His Wife for a Hat and many other case studies of people with brain disorders. He died this year, and in the last year, he knew he had terminal cancer. In the last couple years of his life, he wrote these beautiful essays that were published in the New York Times. One was about celebrating Sabbath dinner with his parents in London growing up. Another is about his own thoughts about cancer and facing the end of his life. It's a small book, but it's a beautiful little book. And so the older person who likes to read on your list, this might be a book to give them. For Milwaukee history lovers, you will want Milwaukee City of Neighborhoods by John Gerda, the well-known local historian. This is a series of 37 essays with more than 1,000 photos of Milwaukee neighborhoods. And John really tries to define the sweep of change in the neighborhoods. The pictures include historical pictures going all the way back to present day ones, maps. It's just an amazing visual book of what Milwaukee neighborhoods used to look like and what they look like now. And if you're a realtor, you definitely want this book. And I'm very fond of Rosemary, the Hidden Kennedy Daughter by Kate Clifford Larson. It's a biography of JFK's sister, Rosemary, who spent more than half her life at St. Coletta's home in Jefferson, Wisconsin. She had developmental disabilities in an era when people often struggled to figure out how to raise a child with them. And those clashed with her father's intense ambitions. And as a result, he ordered a prefrontal lobotomy for her that diminished her even further and then stashed her far away from Massachusetts here. So it's an American tragedy and a fascinating piece of history at the same time. One more it would be classified as a YA book for teens, but adults would certainly like it, and that's Untwined by Edgewich Danticat. It's the story of twins, teenage girls. The family gets in a car accident, and I won't reveal what happened, but it leads one of the twins to have to go through a major readjustment of her life. And it's a beautifully written book and touches on a lot of themes of grief and individuation. And again, I think both teens and adults would enjoy it.
Jim, is there anything else you'd like to add?
Just please remember that we'll have this list pinned at jsonline.com/books, so it'll be easy for you to find, and you can print it out and take it with you to the bookstore.
You can find Jim's list online at tapmilwaukee.com, or you can find it in print in today's Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Did you know Brett Favre was a bit of a prankster during his time with the Green Bay Packers? Here's Leroy Butler breaking down some of Brett Favre's greatest pranks.
I think the other thing that probably stands out to all of his teammates is the pranks that he played.
Absolutely.
As well. And
yes.
I was witness to a few of the better
he
ones.
He'd do it on one of you guys if you're not careful.
Well, he always would set off those little sulfur bombs in the locker room, which were absolutely disgusting and made everybody sick to their stomach.
We'd laugh.
But maybe we can each give our favorite prank. I have a really good one that I remember. That was John Yurkovic was using the facilities. The bathroom was right off the locker room, as you recall. And Favre gave him a Gatorade bath over the top of the wall. And I'll never forget seeing Yurkovic walk out of the...
just unbelievable. Only he would think of that. Yeah. Was the guy in there using the bathroom, go get me some water and dump it.
Cold water, because I never heard anybody scream like that in my whole life.
That's unbelievable.
That was pretty. Give me your favorite one.
We had a rookie. I don't necessarily remember who the guy was. I just remember we had a young guy, and he was in the meeting room. He kept squirming in his chair. And Brett was turning red laughing. So I asked Chewy, what has he done? He said, just watch this guy, just watch him. So this guy's squirming. Brett went down and put heat in the guy's jaw.
Oh, my God.
The guy's like, turning and he asked the coach, can I be excused? And said, well, why? You can't leave. This is the best part of the installation. You can't leave now. Wait for 20 minutes. He said, no, I really have to go. He was on fire. So he runs down there and jumps in the shower. Well, if you read that bomb stuff, it says do not mix with water.
Oh.
It makes it hotter. You have to use powder to put out the fire.
Uh-huh.
And now this guy smelled like a one-year-old the whole meeting. It was hilarious. We were laughing so hard. You would do stuff like that to rookies, but
yeah,
you'd really have to watch out for this guy.
I think one last one, Rogers revealed one that Brett played on him early in his career, which was he put a helmet out to have, you know, players will sign helmets as a charity thing.
Yeah.
So he had the whole team come, and he had Rogers sign it, and it turned out to be Rogers' helmet.
No!
So he had to wear it in practice. He signed his own helmet, thinking he was giving it as a charity.
I did not know that.
He had to wear it to practice with all the signatures.
That's hilarious.
That's pretty, you know, that's the mind of a guy who's pretty creative.
And that's what he wanted. He liked his teammates, obviously. He loved having fun. And, you know, and even looking back on some of these plays, I'm thinking his mindset had to be to just have fun.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to see a video of that segment, you can find it at jsonline.com/sports. And with that, we'll wrap up today's show. Thanks so much for listening. Hope you had a wonderful Thanksgiving once again. Best of luck with the start of your holiday shopping, and we'll see you next week for more.